In his room, Frank poured water into the basin and washed up, then spread a paper sack he got from the lobby, took off his boots, and scraped the mud from them.
Well, at least I didn't have to shoot anyone.
He did make a bitter enemy. Frank realized that for a fact. He pulled a rocking chair over to the window, looking out over the street. More gunslicks were arriving in town with the newly arrived wagons.
I should just slip out of here quietly, head into the timber, and vanish for a few months.
He knew he wouldn't do that. He couldn't do that. It just wasn't in him to run away. Besides, he had his doubts the Easterners would give up. They'd just wait until he resurfaced, and the hunt would be on again. There was this, too. He just couldn't believe in this day and time the authorities would allow something like this hunt to continue. It was savage. The West was still wild, sure, but this hunt was ridiculous and illegal.
I insist that you march right up to that barbarian's room and demand he vacate it immediately.
The woman's voice reached Frank from the small lobby.
Well, it's just not going to happen.
A man said something Frank couldn't catch.
But he's a notorious murderer.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
Again, the man's voice, probably Phil, the bartender desk clerk, couldn't be heard.
But we need that room for some of our friends.
This time, the man's voice could be heard.
Well, damn it, lady, you can't have it. It's signed and paid for.
Frank smiled at that.
You are a very impolite man.
Frank turned his attention back to the rainy street. The wagons moved out to the end of the street, and the newly arrived gunfighters were nowhere in sight. Probably all downstairs in the saloon. Frank pulled on his boots and slung his gun belt around him. He checked the chambers in his peacemaker, then, after a short pause, rummaged in his saddlebags and took out a short-barreled .45, loaded it, and stuck it behind his belt. Left side, butt forward. He slipped on his coat and exited the room, carefully locking the door behind him. Frank went out to the street through the small hotel lobby and walked over to the cafe to buy some food for Wolf, then strolled down to Bob's livery. The stagecoaches were parked by the side of the building, the horses in the corral. Frank forked some hay for Horse, gave Wolf his food, and filled up the water bucket. After he ate his fill, Wolf went outside for a few minutes to do his business, then returned to the stall, circled his bed a half dozen times, curled up, and went to sleep. Frank stood in the huge open entrance to the livery for a few minutes, just out of the steady drizzle, looking up and down the street. Foot traffic was very light.
Can't hide all day. Sure have no intention of running.
He checked his watch, then snapped the lid closed. Far too early for a drink.
Think I'll have some coffee. Let the chips fall.
He walked the boardwalk slowly, making his way toward the saloon, under the protective cover of the awning. Frank entered the saloon. As soon as he did, all conversation ceased. All eyes turned toward him. He walked over to the bar and took a place at the far end, his back protected.
What'll it be, Frank?
Got some fresh-made coffee?
Just fixed a pot. I'll pour you a cup.
Phil leaned close.
Lonesome Howard is here.
Frank's eyes narrowed.
Where?
Sitting in the shadows to your left, against the wall.
I thought he retired about 5 years ago. Heard he was ranching down in Arizona territory.
I guess the big money drawed him out. Here's your coffee.
Frank took his coffee and walked across the large crowded room to the table where Lonesome was sitting by himself, a bottle of whiskey and a Bible in front of him. Frank sat down and stared at the man for a few silent seconds.
Frank, you're looking well.
And you, Howard?
Thank you. Time has treated me well, I must admit.
He stared at Frank for a short time.
Why are you still here, Frank?
Running is something I don't do well.
I understand.
I thought you gave up gunslinging.
The money is too good this time, Frank. I hope you realize this is nothing personal.
I know. How much goes to the man who kills me?
Oh, many thousands of dollars.
And you think you could take me, Howard?
Lonesome smiled and tapped his open Bible.
There is a time to kill, Frank. Says so, right here in the good book.
Frank returned the smile.
Don't tell me you think you're doing God's work.
I reckon perhaps I am. You've killed a lot of men in your time here on this earth.
They were trying to kill me.
Oh, Perhaps that was true in a few cases, but not always. You have a sickness, Frank, and the only way it can be cured is with a bullet.
From your gun?
I hope so.
You'll understand if I don't wish you luck.
Frank delivered the statement with a flatness of tone that caused Lonesome to look up and meet Frank's eyes.
I could take that as a threat, Frank.
Take it any damn way you like. You even act as though you're going to pull on me, and I'll kill you, Howard.
I should kill you right here and now, Frank.
Try it.
The man known throughout the West as Lonesome Howard stared hard at Frank for a few seconds. Then he relaxed and put both hands on the table.
Not yet, Frank. The hunt has not officially started.
When does it start?
I really don't know. I believe an Easterner named Vanderhoot is the man who began all this.
Did you say Vanderhoot?
Horace Vanderhoot. He spent thousands of dollars on detectives searching for you.
He's in town.
Well, then I must look him up and introduce myself. Perhaps this small adventure can be ended quickly.
And you'll be thousands of dollars richer.
Yes, of course.
Or dead.
You can't take me, Frank. You're not that quick.
We'll see, won't we?
I suppose we will. Have you made your peace with God, Frank?
Not sure he's there to make peace with.
Do you want me to pray for you?
Frank leaned back in his chair.
Howard, you are a walking contradiction.
I don't think so.
Well, you are. Either that or you're crazy as a Bessie bug. One or the other.
You're calling me insane?
If the boot fits.
Howard closed his Bible and put one hand on the cover.
I shall enjoy killing you, Frank. That is a sin, and I know it, but it's the truth. I must remember to pray for my own weaknesses.
And a practicing hypocrite, too.
What?
That's you, Lonesome. You know the meaning of the word, don't you?
You're very insulting, Frank Morgan. Of course I do. And I am most certainly not a hypocrite.
Then you're a fool. Take your choice.
Lonesome pulled back his chair and stood up. He looked down at Frank.
Make your peace with God, Frank Morgan. Your time is near.
You, my hypocritical colleague, can take your advice, wrap it in that Bible, and shove it up your ass. I say that because the Bible means nothing to you, Howard. It's just words on paper to you. Nothing more.
You speak blasphemy, Frank.
I speak truth.
The next time we meet, Frank, might be the moment you meet God.
Or you meet Lucifer.
Lonesome Howard blinked a couple of times, then turned and walked away. While waiting for his coffee to cool down some, Frank rolled a cigarette and studied the crowd of gun handlers lining the bar and filling the tables. A few of them glanced his way, nodded their heads in greeting. Most just ignored him, even though they knew him. Some casually, others for years.
Know what they're waiting for?
Old Bob jerked his thumb toward the gun slicks.
The hunt is about to officially begin. That's what Lonesome just told me.
That was Lonesome Howard?
In person.
I thought he was retired.
He was, for a number of years. But the money for killing me pulled him back into the game.
Bob looked the crowd over.
Too many for one man, Frank. There must be 35 or 40 gunmen in here.
With more coming in.
Some of them yahoos look older than me.
I think some of them are. That grizzled old hombre standing at the very end of the bar, at the curve, is called Rogers. He's in his late 60s, at least. He was a well-known highwayman in California before the war between the states. That's been over for more than 20 years.
Who's the dude with the pearl-handled guns, one standing in the center of the bar?
His name is Olmsted. Made his reputation down in Oklahoma Territory. No man's land. He's a back shooter.
Not far along the bar from Olmsted, a couple of hombres let the liquor start talking for them.
You go to hell!
I'll take you with me!
The two men stepped away from the bar to face each other, their hands hovering over their gun butts.
Get ready to hit the floor.
I've been ready.
You've been making your brags behind my back, Les. I'm damn tired of it. Now feel your hand or shut the hell up.
Both men grabbed for their guns. Les was quicker. He fired once, the bullet striking his challenger in the center of the chest. The mortally wounded man fell back against the bar and clung there for a few seconds, then slumped to the dirty barroom floor. He died without uttering another word.
I warned him about that damn mouth of his'n. I told him I'd shut it permanent someday, and by God, I'd done it.
One less for you to have to deal with.
Frank nodded his head in agreement and sipped his cooling coffee. He set the cup down on the table.
I'm hoping a lot of that'll go on before the actual hunt begins.
It sure would cut down the odds some, for a fact.
A couple of men dragged the body of the dead man out of the saloon. Phil, the barkeep, tossed some sawdust on the blood spots on the floor. The gunslingers resumed their drinking, talking, and playing cards. The Easterners had not made an appearance since retiring to their rooms and wagons. Bob finished his drink and left, saying he had to get back to his livery. Frank sat alone at the table, drinking coffee and smoking, his eyes constantly moving, studying the crowd in the packed saloon. The rain continued to come down from the dark, sullen skies. Not a hard downpour, but a quiet, steady drizzle. The Olsen cousins, Brooks and Martin, entered the saloon and found a place at the crowded bar. They were cleaned up, including a change of clothing. Both of them were now dressed in black suits with black shirts open at the collar, and both were wearing two guns tied down. Frank sensed they both were primed and cocked, hunting trouble.
Damn good place to find it.
Brooks bumped into the man standing next to him. Accidentally or deliberately, Frank couldn't tell, causing the man to spill some of his drink.
Watch what the hell you're doing, boy.
Don't call me boy, skunk breath.
Skunk breath?
The gunslinger turned to fully face the younger man.
Why, you damn mouthy little punk.
Brooks stepped away a couple of steps, brushing back his coat.
What'd you call me? Skunk breath?
I called you a mouthy punk. Are you hard of hearing or just plain stupid?
I'll kill you for that.
Brooks' face flushed, his eyes narrowed down. His hands were poised just above the butts of his guns.
You damn sure got it to do, boy.
Brooks backed up, putting a few more feet between them. The crowd at the bar stepped away out of the line of fire. Frank watched the building confrontation without moving or changing expression. He was sure Brooks intentionally provoked this moment. He did not know the older gun handler. Never saw him before.
Drag iron!
After you, boy. I ain't never pulled on no damn punk kid, and I sure don't intend to start now.
You got a big fat mouth, mister.
Feel your hand, kid.
Brooks was fast. Frank had to give him that much. He pulled and shot the older man before the man could clear leather. The gut shot gunslick staggered back and fell against the bar. Frank listened to Brooks' giggle and concluded then the young man was possibly about half crazy.
Damn punk!
Brooks shot him again. The older man fell to the floor. Brooks drilled him again. The old gunfighter lay motionless, dead. Brooks slobbered down his chin as he giggled.
The kid is fast and crazy as a lizard. Bad combination.
One of the gunslingers Frank knew casually, name of Fargo, turned and looked at Frank for a few seconds. Frank shrugged slightly, and Fargo nodded, then turned back to the bar.
You got him good, Brooks. Man, did you drill him proper?
I did, didn't I?
Brooks holstered his six gun. He didn't reload, Frank noticed. A clear sign the kid was an amateur.
This skunk dead?
Sure he's dead. Hell, I put three slugs in him.
Let's get out of here.
No, I like it in here. Let's have a drink. We got room at the bar now.
Martin looked around at the room full of hostile faces, then reluctantly joined his cousin at the bar. Frank finished his coffee and stood. Immediately, all eyes in the room turned to him. He slowly brushed back his coat, exposing the butt of his second six gun. A dozen pair of eyes quickly averted. Frank began the slow walk toward the front door.
Turn around, Morgan. I feel lucky today, and I got me a need for that money I'll get when I plug you.
Frank paused and slowly turned. He did not know the man facing him. The other men on both sides made room. No one wanted to be caught in a crossfire.
You sure the hunt has started?
Now's as good a time as any to begin it.
You got a name?
Why?
I need to know what to put on your tombstone, that's why.
The name is Tyler.
And I ain't figuring on being planted anytime soon, Morgan. I'm figuring on being a rich man in about 1 minute. Here now!
Frank cut his eyes for an instant to the man standing in the doorway leading to the guest rooms.
The hunt has not yet begun. Good afternoon, Mr. Morgan. I don't believe we have been formally introduced. I am Horace Vanderhoot. These two men standing behind me, holding sawed-off shotguns, are my bodyguards.
You mean those two with shotguns pointed at me?
Very astute of you, Mr. Morgan.
You must be very afraid of me, Mr. Vanderhoot.
Let's just say I believe in taking precautions.
When does this here hunt get started?
In a few days. I want to wait until the weather clears.
Why?
Mr. Morgan might want to run, and I want to give him the opportunity to do so.
Morgan, don't run.
Frank cut his eyes to Dolan in a darkened corner of the saloon.
He might.
You might, mister. Not Morgan. You don't know him. I do. He ain't gonna run.
Vanderhoot waved a hand in a very effeminate gesture. It was not lost on the room filled with hard-bitten men. Many of them smiled, including Frank.
Whatever. Besides, the longer we wait, the more the tension will heighten. And when it reaches its zenith, the fun will really begin.
Who the hell is Zenith?
I got no idea. I never heard of him.
A pained look crossed Vanderhoot's face.
No money will be paid for Frank Morgan's death until I officially announce the start of the hunt.
You can be charged for this. It's against the law.
Perhaps. Oh, quaint. If there was any law out here. But the nearest sheriff is a week's ride away, in good weather. And you're a murderer, Mr. Morgan. Besides, there are others who have placed a bounty on your head, and you know it.
Frank looked at the man and remained silent. Vanderhoot did his homework for a fact. Frank shifted his gaze to Tyler.
Still want to lock horns with me, Tyler?
I'll wait for a spell, I reckon.
Then get out of my way.
I was just standing outside the door listening. Care for a few words of advice?
Speak your piece, Doc.
Saddle up and get the hell gone from here, Frank.
Can't do it.
You mean you won't?
I reckon.
You are a very stubborn man.
I've been told that before.
Where is the body from the second shooting?
Still on the floor. Somebody'll probably get tired of stepping over him and drag him out before long.
Did you know either dead man?
Nah, but I discovered one thing. Brooks is insane.
Yes, I've suspected that for several years. Martin is not much better.
True, but Brooks is kill crazy. If you got any unsolved gunshot murders around here, I'd sure look hard at him.
I can't think of any.
Raven checked his watch, then snapped it shut.
I've got to ride out in the country a few miles to check on a patient, Frank. I'll see you tonight.
I reckon I'll be here.
Frank checked on Wolf and Horse, and then went back to his room and stretched out on the bed. Within minutes, he was deep in sleep. When Frank stepped out onto the boardwalk, it was full dark and pouring rain. He walked to the cafe, had supper, then took a packet of scraps to Wolf and sat with him for a time after the big cur ate.
Doc's right, Wolf. We ought to pack up and pull out. But I just don't have it in me to run. I made it through some hard times, though. So I reckon I'll make it through this mess.
His quiet chat with Wolf was shattered by a couple of gunshots from up the street. Frank paused, waiting for more shots, but none came. Moments later, Bob came stomping into the livery.
Damn crazy gun hands. What the hell do they...
Whoa!
Frank stepped out of the stall. Bob pulled up short when he spotted him.
Them fools, they keep shooting each other. Your problem's gonna be solved. There won't be none left.
That'll suit me just fine, Bob. Who got shot?
I don't know his name. Some gun slick from New Mexico territory. He wasn't as slick as he thought. Took two slugs in the belly. He's still alive, but not for long.
Doc make it back?
Not yet.
Fella's gonna die hard, gut shot.
That troubled you?
Not really. Who shot him?
Don't know him neither. Man ain't been in town more than 2 hours. Just rode in. Someone called him Vickers.
I know him. He's mean as a rattlesnake, just as quick. He must have just made it through before the slides closed the road.
He's here, that's all I know. And walking around trouble hunting. That ain't all, neither.
What else?
That bodyguard you hit on the noggin with the coffee pot.
Sonny. Yeah, what about him?
He's in the saloon making all kinds of mouths about what he's gonna do to you.
He don't worry me near as much as all these hard cases gathering in town. Sonny'll do what his employers tell him to do.
That's just it, Frank. He quit them city folk.
He's got the bounty money on his mind. Can't worry about him any more than I worry about the others. Bob, I may decide to sleep here tonight. I'll make me a pallet in the loft. That all right with you?
Sure, help yourself. I'm going to my shack. See you in the morning.
I hope so.
Bob returned the smile and walked out the rear of the livery. His shack was in the back of the stable. In the glow of lamplight, Frank checked his pistols, loading up the sixth chamber. He usually kept the hammer over an empty chamber, but considering the circumstances in the town, he might need all the firepower he could muster at any time. Telling Wolf to stay put, Frank stepped out of the livery and headed for the saloon. He could not show fear. The instant he did that, he would be dead. He was a man alone, but had to behave as if he had an army behind him. He did not pass a single local citizen on his walk to the saloon. Apparently, they were settled into their homes for the night.
Sure don't blame them. The town full of bounty hunters, and the weather is lousy.
As had become the custom, heads turned when Frank entered the crowded saloon. He ignored the hard looks and walked to the far end of the bar and ordered coffee.
Bill, coffee please.
A gun hand sidled over to Frank.
Mind if I drink my beer over here?
Suit yourself.
I done made up my mind about this stupid hunt, Morgan.
Oh?
Yeah. I'm out of it. I'll stick around till the road is open, then I'm gone.
What changed your mind?
A number of things. Mainly, though, because this whole thing is sick. I've hired my gun out many times for a lot of reasons, but never for nothing like this here. It's stupid. And I just flat don't like them damn Easterners.
Neither do I.
Yeah, I reckon you don't.
He looked down at his drink.
I know a way through the mountains. It's a tough ride, but it's passable. I'm heading out come first light. You won't come along?
Frank met the gunny's eyes.
I should. I know that. But I just can't. You understand?
Yeah. I reckon I do, Frank. I sure do. I ain't much for running myself. Just the thought of running away from a fracas sort of sticks in my craw.
It's the way I feel about it.
The gunfighter lifted his glass.
Well, luck to you, Frank.
Thanks.
Through the front glass of the saloon, Frank watched lightning dart across the skies, listened as thunder rumbled, then heard the rain increase in intensity.
When the hell are we gonna get this show going? I'm getting goddamn tired of waiting.
Patience! Patience!
Horace Vanderhoot shouted from the doorway leading from the hotel to the saloon.
As soon as the rain ceases, the hunt will begin. $50,000 will go to the man who kills the notorious murderer and gunfighter, Frank Morgan. But if Frank Morgan is killed before I officially announce the start of the hunt, not one penny will go to that man. Here is something that might pique your interest. With the exception of Frank Morgan, the last man standing will be declared the winner of the hunt. At last count, there were almost 60 of you men in town. Only one will ride out $50,000 richer. Think about that and act accordingly. For now, I bid you all a very pleasant good night.
Well, now ain't that a kick in the butt?
Do that mean what I think it means?
Damn sure does, Jimmy.
A red-headed gun hawk stepped away from the bar to face the speaker.
And I'm getting tired of looking at your ugly mug.
Frank glanced around the saloon. There was not a local in sight. They all quietly left the watering hole. Three soiled doves were standing together, pressed up against a far wall. Fear was evident in their faces.
You're calling me ugly, Steve? Why? When you was a little boy, you was so damn ugly, your mama had to tie a piece of salt pork round your neck so the wolves would play with you.
Frank waited and watched, his coffee turning cold in the cup. The laughter slowly faded, and the situation turned tense as the two men backed up a few steps, their hands poised for a hook and draw.
You leave my ma out of this, you piece of coyote crap.
Sure will, because you didn't have no human ma. You was born in a traveling circus in a monkey cage.
I kill you!
You got it to do.
A gunhead nearby turned to Frank.
You're enjoying this, ain't you, Morgan?
Well, I'm glad it's them facing a bullet and not me.
Your time is coming.
I'm sure it is.
And soon, Frank thought. Like waiting in an old deserted town called Red Rock. Frank had given the old town a lot of thought. The more he thought, the better it sounded for a showdown.
You're just a sore-assed, shit-eating boyfriend of a buffalo. Why I didn't kill you before, I don't know.
Steve was really working himself into a lather. It wouldn't be long now.
You cuss real good, Steve. But then I heard for years you always did have a big mouth with no guts to back it up.
That does it for me, you butt-ugly peckerwood!
Steve grabbed for his gun. Jimmy cleared Leather first and got off the first shot. The bullet missed Steve and blew a hole through one of the front windows. Steve fired, the bullet hitting Jimmy in the leg and knocking him back against the bar. Jimmy grunted in shock and sudden pain as he lifted his .44. He squeezed the trigger. The slug hit Steve in the left shoulder and spun him around, throwing him against the table. Cards and chips scattered all over the floor. Jimmy cocked and fired again. The bullet missed its mark and blew a leg off a wooden chair. Down on one knee, Steve leveled his six gun and fired. His shot was true, the bullet slamming into Jimmy's belly and doubling him over. Gasping in pain, Jimmy slowly raised his pistol. The slug hit Steve in the center of his face, disintegrating his nose as the bullet ripped into his brain. Steve dropped to the floor like a heavy rock and did not move.
Oh, God, I hurt. Oh.
I bet he do. Somebody get the doc.
Why? Steve's dead as a rock, and Jimmy ain't long for this world.
That's a damn lie.
Jimmy covered the bloody hole in his belly.
I ain't gonna die. I'm gonna collect that bounty money.
No, you ain't. So why don't you just do us all a favor? Shut your mouth and die.
You black-hearted son of a bitch.
Frank stood at the end of the bar and watched in silence. It was nothing new to him.
Did somebody go for the dock?
Nope.
It's raining outside and cold.
Oh, you bastards.
Well, now, that just might be true. I can't take no offense at that. My pa was a man with a wandering eye, for sure.
Hard waves of pain hit the man. He trembled at the shock of it.
Oh, God, it hurts. I hurt so bad.
Well, that's what you get when you play with guns, Jimmy.
Damn y'all to the hellfire.
The front door opened, and a very irritated and rumpled Doc Raven walked in.
The one stretched down on the floor with half a head is dead, Doc. The one on his knees won't do us the favor yet.
Thank you.
Doc Raven pushed his way through the crowd. He knelt down beside Jimmy and tried to pull the wounded man's hands away from his bloody stomach. He could not.
I can't help you if you won't let me look at the wound.
You give me something for the pain, Doc.
Let me look at the wound.
No! If I move my hands, my guts will fall out.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Your intestines are not gonna fall out.
He looked up at the men gathered around.
Some of you grab him and stretch him out on the floor. I've got to see about this wound.
A group of men stretched Jimmy out on the floor and pulled his hands away from the bullet wound. Doc Raven looked in.
Oh, it's bad, ain't it, Doc?
Well, it isn't good.
Am I gonna die?
Probably.
There was nothing much Raven could do. He cleaned the wound and packed it closed.
Is that all you're gonna do?
Nothing else I can do. You got a big hole in your stomach.
Oh, Lord. I'm really gonna die, ain't I?
You want me to get a minister for you?
Can he fix the hole in my gut?
No.
Son of a pit. This is a hell of a town!
Raven shook his head and stood up, disgust on his face and in his eyes. He looked down the bar at Frank, then turned his attention to the bartender.
Phil, get me a cup of coffee, please.
Coming right up, Doc.
Doc Raven joined Frank at the bar.
What a mess.
And it'll get worse, Doc. Bet on it. Horace Vanderhoot opened Pandora's box.
You're right. The Undertaker is going to be very busy for a time. I'll suggest this one more time, Frank. Get clear of here.
Doc, you're the man who runs this town. If you order me to leave, I'll do so. But not until then.
I won't order you out, Frank. I've told you that.
What if locals start getting hurt or killed?
The people will handle it then.
Raven smiled at Frank's expression of doubt.
Frank, this town is filled with veterans of the war between the states. Ex-buffalo hunters, Indian fighters, and early settlers. Believe me, when the locals get enough, they'll handle it. Have you ever heard of a western town being totally buffaloed?
Not many, for a fact.
Well, this one won't be either.
Oh, Doc, it's hurt real bad. Help me!
Can you do anything for him?
Nothing. Probing for the bullet would be useless, even if I could locate and remove it. I can't cut him open and repair his stomach.
Somebody get that crybaby out of here. I'm getting tired of listening to him holler.
You know that insensitive louse?
Jack Miller, back shooter out of Arkansas. I thought he was long dead.
Something's wrong with me, Doc. It's getting hard for me to breathe. The light is fading.
Good. Go on and die. Shut up, Jack. Let the man die in peace. You want to try to shut me up?
Doc!
Blood's pouring out his mouth, Doc. I don't think he's long for this world.
Jimmy's legs began jerking, his boot heels drumming on the dirty floor.
That's all. He's gone.
About damn time.
Miller turned to Phil.
Give me another beer.
Some of you men carry these bodies out of here and over to the Undertaker's.
The card games and talking resumed. Doc Raven finished his coffee and picked up his black bag.
I'll see you in the morning, Frank.
Sure hope so, Doc.
Frank stood at the bar for a few moments, then pushed his way through the crowd and walked out of the bar. He stood for a moment on the boardwalk, breathing in the cold, wet air of fall and mulling over his situation. What did Vanderhoot say? As soon as the rain ceased, the hunt would begin. Frank walked down the boardwalk toward the barn. He'd sleep in the loft this night. He was sure the saloon would be noisy until the wee hours. There were few lamplights shining. The locals were abed.
Good idea.
In the livery, Frank got his blanket roll and climbed into the loft. He was asleep in the hay a few minutes after closing his eyes. Frank awakened at Wolf's low, almost inaudible growl in the stall beneath where he slept in the loft. He lay still, listening, his right hand silently closing around the butt of his peacemaker. Wolf did not repeat his growl. Then Frank heard the very faint scrape of a boot. It sounded as though it came from just outside the livery. Frank eared back the hammer of the .45 and waited. After a few quiet moments, he heard bootsteps moving away from the livery, slowly fading into the night. He pulled on his boots and silently climbed down to the floor of the livery. Frank let Wolf out back to do his morning business and, without lighting the lantern, slipped out the front of the stable and stood for a time in the early morning darkness, listening. The rain had slackened off to an irritating drizzle. He could hear no sound except the soft sighing of the cold wind. Frank stepped back into the huge livery, silently closing the door, and popped a match into light, checking his watch. The hands read 3:30. He let Wolf back in, and the big cur immediately went to the stall with Horse and lay down in a corner.
You stay put.
Frank walked to the cafe. It was dark. He guessed the cook probably wouldn't show up for another hour. He glanced at the saloon. It, too, was dark and silent. He turned up the collar of his coat against the chill and walked on until he reached the edge of the short business district, then crossed over and began walking down the other side. He walked slowly, pausing often to listen. He heard nothing out of the ordinary. It appeared he was the only one awake. He wondered where all the hired guns found shelter to sleep. Then he recalled overhearing one of the gunslicks in the saloon the past night talking about them renting several empty houses in town.
I hope the roofs leak and they'll all catch pneumonia.
Frank was surprised to find old Bob up and in the stable when he returned from Main Street.
I put on a coffee pot. Should be ready to swallow in a few minutes. I got some biscuits making, too.
Sounds good to me.
They both turned as Doc Raven strolled into the livery.
Morning, boys.
What are you doing up so early, Doc?
Couldn't sleep. Did I hear you say you've got coffee, Bob?
For a fact, you did. Come on, we'll have us a...
I guess I'd better get my bag. Not even sunup in the day is bloody.
Doc Raven headed for the door, then paused and looked back at Frank.
Oh, I almost forgot. I have something for you, Frank. Stop by my office sometime this morning, will you?
Sure, Doc.
The doctor walked out of the livery into the rain.
Wonder what that was all about.
Beats me. You want to have that coffee now?
I better tag along behind Doc. He might run into trouble. Think so. Cup would have tasted mighty fine.
I'll think about you whilst I'm eating them biscuits.
Frank grinned and stepped out into the wet pre-dawn darkness, quickly catching up with the doctor.
What is it, Frank?
Keeping you out of trouble.
You keeping me out of trouble? That's a laugh. Damn, I sure wanted some coffee.
We'll get some at the cafe. Should be open by the time we see what those shots were all about.
Doc grabbed his bag from the office. A moment later, they were slopping across the street. A group of men stood under the boardwalk awning, looking out at two bodies sprawled face down in the muddy street.
They're both dead, Doc. They killed each other, I reckon.
What a pity.
Doc Raven looked to the locals standing on the boardwalk.
Bring that lantern closer. That's it. Thanks.
It didn't take him long to check the men for signs of life. He stood up and wiped his hands on a towel he took from his bag.
Yeah, they're dead all right. Both of them belly shot and one with a bullet in his chest. The other with a bullet hole between his eyes.
Frank picked up the six shooters and checked the cylinders. Three shots were fired from each weapon.
Guess they fired at the same time while they were going down.
You know them, Frank?
No.
Any of you men know them?
I seen them ride in about sundown. I never laid eyes on them before then.
Go sleep it off.
Somebody give me a drink.
The gunslick took a step and fell face first into the muddy street, out cold. He'd be drinking rain, mud, and horse piss for a time.
Humanity. Come on, Frank, I want to talk to you.
What about these bodies?
Pull them behind the undertaker's office. They'll keep in this weather.
Frank accompanied Doc Raven back to his office. Doc waved him to a seat. Raven built up the fire in the stove and put on a pot of water to boil.
We'll have some coffee in a little while. Frank, do you find anything odd about this constant delay in starting off this so-called hunt?
Well, other than the obvious, no. Vanderhoot says the hunt will begin as soon as the rain stops.
He changed his mind again.
When?
Late last evening. Now he says the hunt will begin when the roads are open.
I hadn't heard. Hell, Doc, that might be 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes. Something is very queer about this entire matter.
I reckon so, now that you bring it up.
The doctor pulled open a drawer on his desk and tossed a badge to Frank.
I've had that thing for a long time. Never wore it. Didn't want anyone to know I had it.
Frank looked at the badge. A deputy U.S. Marshal's badge.
Don't understand, Doc.
I can appoint anyone I choose to help me in a time of emergency. That's why I was given 2 badges. That's the law as I understand it. Well, I'm appointing you, Frank. Stand up and raise your right hand.
Are you serious?
I sure as hell am. You've carried a badge before, now you're going to carry another one. Stand up.
Frank stood up.
You swear to uphold the law in South Raven?
Yeah.
Good. Let me pin this on you.
This may not be legal, Doc.
It is as far as I'm concerned.
When were you appointed a deputy U.S. Marshal?
About 10 years ago. I told the federal judge then I wasn't qualified to have the badge. He said I could swear someone in to help should the need ever present itself. The commission is still good. Now, go out and find out what this damn hunt is all about.
How about some coffee first?
Good idea. With thinking like that, you'll make a fine U.S. Marshal.
Frank and Doc Raven enjoyed a pot of coffee and some good conversation until daybreak. Then they walked over to the cafe to get some breakfast. The place was crowded with Vanderhoot, his eastern friends, and their wives. Frank and Raven took the only table left in the cafe and sat down.
Take off your heavy jacket, Frank. Let him see the badge. Let's see what reaction we get from Vanderhoot's crowd.
Should be interesting.
Frank stood to remove his winter coat and walked over to hang it on a hook. When he turned around to stand for a moment facing the front, the cafe patrons fell silent, all eyes on the badge pinned to his vest. Horace Vanderhoot's face flushed a deep red. He opened his mouth to speak, then closed it when he could find no words.
You people suddenly run out of things to talk about.
Where did you get that badge? I don't believe it's real.
It's real. Frank Morgan is a legally appointed deputy U.S. Marshal.
Raven smiled.
You people should have done a bit more checking before you embarked on this barbaric hunt.
You weren't wearing it before. Why did you wait until now to put it on?
Maybe I just wanted to see if this so-called hunt of yours was real, or if you were just playing some sort of silly game.
At that remark, Vanderhoot suddenly looked very startled. His hands gripped the edge of the table until his knuckles turned white. Odd, Frank thought, taking in the man's reaction. What brought that on? Vanderhoot suddenly stood up, took his wife's hand, and together they left the cafe.
Must not have liked the way his eggs were cooked.
I guess so.
Frank sat down with Doc.
The hell's going on, Doc?
I really don't know for sure. But I have some strong suspicions.
Want to share them with me?
Not yet, Frank. Give me a little while.
All right.
They watched as the Easterners left the cafe as a group, their food uneaten. The waitress set their own food on the table before them. It smelled delicious.
It's coming together in my mind. I'm going to have a chat with Horace after I eat. I think the man has set a very dangerous game into motion, and if I'm correct, the man is a damn fool.
I knew that the first day you told me about the hunt.
Frank buttered a biscuit and took a bite as Doc Raven nodded his head and glanced outside. It was raining hard again. When Frank walked into the saloon later that day, one could hear a pin drop, even though the place was filled with gunslicks. Horace Vanderhoot and his eastern cohorts were nowhere to be seen. Not a word was spoken as Frank made his way to the far end of the bar.
Cup of coffee, please, Phil.
Coming right up, Marshal.
Phil turned with a smile and a twinkle in his eyes. Obviously, the word spread fast through the town.
I never knowed you was a federal marshal, Morgan.
Now you do.
And that's supposed to make a difference to us?
Only if you're smart.
Well, it don't to me.
Fargo sat nursing a beer at the other end of the bar.
That's your option, Fargo. This town's still got a nice big jail, right, Phil?
Sure does. Got 4 big cells in it.
You ain't putting me in no damn jail.
Keep running that mouth, I just might.
By God, I'll stand up to this tin badge if none of the rest of you ain't got the guts.
The man pushed back his chair and stood up.
Who are you?
I'm called Utah Slim.
Never heard of you.
Using his left hand, Frank lifted his cup and took a sip of coffee.
Folks is gonna hear about me plenty after I put lead in you, Morgan.
You won't get any money, Slim.
Hell with the money. I want the reputation. A man who kills Frank Morgan can ride his own ticket anywhere in the West.
That there is a natural fact.
A man Frank knew as Nils Finley spoke up.
Slim,
You gotta think of another point. You kill a federal marshal, they ain't never gonna stop looking for you.
The West is a big place. Besides, my mind is made up. Step out here and face me, Morgan.
Mind if I finish my coffee first? I'm a coffee-drinking man, and this is fresh brewed.
Step out here, badge toter! I ain't no damn mood for a mess of John.
In a minute.
Now!
Are you in that big a hurry to die, Slim? Or are you just eager for your next meal? Looks like you had a few since you first got the name Slim.
Hell with you, Morgan! You've gone yeller! I think I'll just shoot you right now and listen to you beg.
Frank stepped away from the bar just as Doc Raven and Bob walked into the saloon. They saw what was happening and immediately stepped to one side, out of the way of any stray bullets.
I don't beg for anything. Danny man, Slim. Never have, never will. So either you make your play or you shut your damn mouth and get out while you're still able to walk.
Utah Slim grabbed for his six gun. Just as his hand closed around the butt, he heard the boom of Frank's peacemaker and felt a hammer blow slam into his belly. He doubled over and grabbed for the bar. He held on and tried to clear leather, finally managing to fumble his Colt from leather. He eared back the hammer and raised the pistol.
Now die, Morgan!
Frank's second shot hit the Utah gunfighter in the chest and knocked him away from the bar. Slim dropped his pistol and fell against the table.
I got Ken who'll get you, Morgan. They'll track you down and kill you.
Not if they're no better than you were.
Utah Slim lost his grip on the table and fell hard to the saloon floor.
You want to look at him, Doc?
Not really, but I suppose I should.
Doc pushed through the crowd and bent down to look at Utah Slim.
I hear the angel's chariot's coming for me.
That's just the rain coming down.
I can hear the beating of heavenly wings.
That's the sound of Sam poking one of the bar women upstairs.
Frank reloaded his peacemaker while Phil poured another cup of coffee for him. He leaned against the bar, saying nothing.
Oh, oh, sweet Jesus!
Hi, Mama!
Utah Slim closed his eyes and died.
Some of you men towed him over to the Undertaker's.
Bob and Doc walked over to Frank, waving to Phil to bring them some coffee. Conversation resumed in the bar as Bob leaned in close to Frank, Doc Raven, and Phil.
Something mighty queer going on in town, boys. Seems them hoity-toity Easterners all of a sudden got into a sweat wanting to pull out.
What do you mean?
Seems like they sent a man out to the Lassiter Ranch to buy a bunch of horses and to see about a guide to take them over the mountains out of here. Everything is supposed to be on the hush-hush.
How'd you hear about it?
A schoolboy who does some work for me down at the livery, Abel Stover, overheard them talking around 5 this morning. He just now told me about it.
Well, now, it's slowly coming into place. My suspicions were quite correct, I'm thinking.
What suspicions?
Let me prowl around some. I want to talk with Maxwell about this. For some reason, he's been avoiding me since they got here. It might be on account of Wilma, but I'll force a conversation with him.
Maybe then you'll get around to telling me what this is all about.
Oh, I will, Frank. You can be assured of that.
Thanks so much, Doc.
You're certainly welcome. Good coffee.
I like it a mite stronger than this.
I'm getting damn tired of stepping over Slim. Come on, some of you boys give me a hand and we'll toss him out the back.
Oh, hell, I'll help you. We can't leave him there for long. You'll commence to stinking. You grab one, then I'll get the other. When you boys open the back door for us.
What lovely people.
In a different way, them damn rich Easterners ain't no better.
I have to concur with that. In fact, I'll add they're worse. Maxwell and his friends all have fine educations that, in the end, seem to have been wasted.
We got some families here in town that's moving out for the time being. They're gonna visit friends in the country till this mess in town is straightened out.
To hell with you, Nichols! I've had it with your damn smart mouth!
Then do something about it, Jake!
Nichols pushed back his chair and stood up.
Get up and fill your hand!
Well, settle down, boys! The weather and waiting is getting to you all.
You go straight to hell, Quinn.
Don't you tell me to go to hell, you two-bit horse thief.
Take it easy, boys, all of you. We didn't come here to shoot each other.
Well, shooting Morgan seems to be out of the question. I ain't gonna be the one to put lead in no damn federal marshal. So what do we do now?
That question settled in the brains of all the men in the saloon. Quinn, Jake, and Nichols looked sheepishly at each other and sat down. Dolan stood up and walked over to stand at the bar beside Morgan.
How do you want to play this, Morgan?
I don't think it's up to me to decide that. It's a decision you men will have to make.
I think this was a mess from the get-go. I thought about it long and hard before I saddled up for this ride.
Think you should have stayed at home?
I do, for a fact.
But now you believe it's too late.
I didn't say that, Morgan. But I tell you this, that badge of yours don't mean squat to me. If that thousands of dollars of bounty money is really up for your head, I'll take my chances on collecting it.
But you have doubts about it being real.
I'm beginning to, yeah. Something smells funny about this deal, and I just flat don't like them damn Easterners.
Frank stood on the boardwalk as night wrapped her dark arms around the countryside. It was a wet darkness, for the rain continued without any signs of abating. Frank saw nothing of the Easterners that day once they left their breakfast in a huff at the cafe. He had no idea where they were or what they might be doing. The last he saw of Doc Raven was the shooting in the saloon. There were lamps on in the doctor's office, but Frank didn't want to disturb him, figuring he might be busy with patients. Frank started to pop a match into flame to light a fresh rolled cigarette, but he caught a glint of light off something in the alley across the muddy street, something that appeared to be about shoulder high. Frank quickly stepped back into the shadows and stuck the unlit cigarette and match into his jacket pocket. He silently made his way down the boardwalk, keeping close to the buildings. He stepped off and ducked into an alley, then made his way behind a couple of buildings and dashed across the street, working his way up to the rear of the alley where he saw the glint of light off metal. Frank cautiously looked around the corner of the building and could just make out the dark shape of a man standing near the mouth of the alley facing the street. The man was holding a rifle. Frank eased his way up the alley, the rain covering any small sound he might make. He slipped close enough to the man to touch him.
You looking for me?
The man spun around, the muzzle of the rifle coming up. Frank hit him on the side of the jaw with a gloved right fist. The man dropped to the littered ground. Frank dragged him out of the alley and up onto the boardwalk, then dragged him into the marshal's office. Wolf came out of the living quarters and sniffed suspiciously at the unconscious man. Frank slapped the man awake and stood over him.
Do I know you?
No. Oh. No. To hell with you, Morgan.
Well, obviously, you know me. I hate to tell you, but the hunt hasn't started yet. It's doubtful it ever will.
Oh. Damn that hunt. I didn't come here to collect no money. I've been looking for you for months, and I aim to kill you.
Why?
Because you killed a buddy of mine, that's why.
You sure I did it?
Damn right.
Who? Where and why?
Huh?
The man's name. Where did it happen? Why did it happen?
Barney Hampton was his name. It happened in Missouri. You called him out into the street and gunned him down.
Wrong on all counts, partner. You've been tracking the wrong man. Now, if I turn you loose, what are you gonna do?
Get me another rifle to shoot you.
Frank walked over to the stove, poured a cup of coffee, and sat down in a wooden swivel chair at the battered old desk. He stared at the man sitting on the floor.
That's unacceptable, partner.
Then you're gonna put me in jail?
I don't see where I have a choice.
I'll kill you when I get out.
Frank wondered how in the world his life became so complicated. He pointed toward a row of cells in the back.
Get in that front cell and close the door. I gotta lock you up until I can decide what to do with you.
You gonna feed me supper?
Get in the damn cell and be quiet.
Surprisingly, the man obliged without another word. Frank locked the door, went back into the office, and stood for a moment. He put the man's rifle in a rack, and his gun belt and pistol in a desk drawer. Then he shook his head in disgust and walked out into the rainy night.
Incredible. This is the damnedest situation I believe I've been in. 50 people wanting to kill me for bounty money, and others showing up to try to avenge a killing I didn't do.
Who are you talking to, Frank?
Myself, Doc. I got a man in the jail claims I killed his buddy Barney Hampton in a hook and draw down in Missouri.
Did you kill this Barney Hampton?
Never heard of a man called Barney Hampton. Never called any man out in the street in Missouri.
The price of fame, Frank.
I guess. What'd you learn from your college friend?
Nothing substantive. He carefully avoided directly answering any question I asked.
So he's hiding something?
Yes, without a doubt.
I got all the bodies carried over to the undertaker. Streets and alleys are clear a dead man. For the time being, that is.
Well, that will certainly please Sister Clarabelle. She came to see me today, complaining about the drinking and cussing and immoral behavior of the gunmen in town. She plans to lead a march up and down the boardwalks tomorrow. In the street if it stops raining.
A march for what?
To protest the gunmen being in town, among other matters. The church has a band, of sorts, then a chorus of ladies. Very ample ladies.
Sounds wonderful.
If the boardwalk doesn't collapse, yes, it will be entertaining, I assure you.
Does the town have a budget for feeding prisoners?
Sure. Get the food at the cafe and keep a record.
I better do that now.
All right, Frank. I'll try to speak with Maxwell again in the morning, for all the good it'll do.
Let me know if you find out anything.
I certainly will, Frank. Good night.
Night, Doc.
Frank walked the streets of town as the rain continued to fall. He went to the cafe and got a plate of food for his prisoner and a sack of scraps for Wolf, carrying the food back to the jail.
Morgan, I want to talk to you.
We'll talk while you eat. You want a cup of coffee?
I'd appreciate it.
Frank pulled a chair over to the cell and sat down.
There never was no shootout in Missouri.
I know.
And I ain't got no kin or buddy named Barney Hampton.
Then why were you laying an ambush for me?
Money. The man gave me $250 to kill you.
What man?
I don't know his name. He never told me. He talked to me while staying in the shadows. I couldn't see him.
Was there anything unusual in his voice?
What do you mean?
Just that. Did he stutter or have a foreign accent? Anything like that?
No. But he talked kind of funny.
How you mean?
I don't rightly know how to say it. He talked, real prissy, sort of, if you know what I mean.
Prissy?
Not like a Western man.
Like maybe he was well-educated? Big city man?
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks. You've been a big help.
You gonna keep me in jail?
What do you think?
I think you'd better. I sort of like it. It's warm and dry in here, and the grub ain't bad.
Frank nodded and left the cell area. He let Wolf out in the back for a few minutes while he locked up and turned down the lamps. Then he went to bed.
Just gets more and more curious.